Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Travis, Becky Lynch joins Bianca Belair, Shotzi, and Charlotte for a 4-on-4 War Games match at Survivor Series in, what is it, 8 days now? 8, 9 days? Mm-hmm. They're going to take on Damage Control with an insecure Bayley feeling a little left out these days. What do you think about the way they built the show around the reveal of Becky? And the idea that that Bayley would come out thinking, since they beat up a couple mid-card, be generous, women backstage, that they would that they were out of options.
Considering how the show was set up and that it was indeed built around the Becky reveal, I was a bit underwhelmed.
It's Becky, great,
yeah, but I was just. Underwhelmed.
How do you feel about Charlotte being the one with Becky's number and Bianca, without saying Becky's name, saying, Charlotte going, I know someone, or you know someone you can call, and playing up that Charlotte's kind of the key to getting Becky to join them in their war against Damage Control? Storyline wise, does that seem right given the history between them and as opponents and as, I guess, colleagues?
Out of the three, absolutely. Bianca's, colleagues with her, but, and I'm sure they all have her number, but it would be Charlotte would be the one if someone needed to convince her. She'd send the person that knows her best and has been through a lot with her over the last, 6 or 7 years or so. That made total sense.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. It just sort of came across like Charlotte and Becky were this inseparable best friend partnership that had just kind of gone separate directions for a while. It was like, if a bunch of people said, Montez, you know who you got to call, and he called Angelo. So that's the part that, like, it was like, maybe they just didn't want to be obvious about it. And, like, you're right. I mean, there's more of a history there, and she's the one who would make the phone call. But they kind of treated it like, y'all know who we're talking about. And it's like, well, would it just be one person?
Yeah, I didn't take it as they tried to make Becky and Charlotte's relationship more than it is or has been on TV. It just seemed – I didn't know for sure, like, it was Becky. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I guess it could be Becky. But I was thinking really outside the box. I was like, is this Lita's? Like, because she's just been gone.
Or Jade Cargill.
Since I did not think of Jade. There is no way they bring Jade Cargill in that kind of situation. But I was thinking Lita, like, because she just hasn't been around since Trish turned on her. She never got her, as far as I remember. I don't think she ever got, like, a promo or let alone a full-on, like, TV deal. So I was thinking maybe it's Lita. But that wouldn't have made sense. Why couldn't it either? All three of them should have been able to call Lita, really. But,
yeah,
again, underwhelmed that it was Becky. It just this whole thing kind of with the Asuka stuff, and that wasn't a real explanation tonight. It was more of the intrigue and how Becky's or how Bayley's feeling, and are they going to? I thought it was great when they're like with Dakota, who's what a scumbag she's turned out to be. When Dakota said, the person that, there's one person in the ring that's not a part of Damage Control.
With
Bayley's stomach, you just see her stomach drop, like, oh my God, this is it. They're about to jump me. And then. So it's been okay, this whole thing with Damage Control.
Yeah.
But some stuff has been like, I wish that was explained a little better.
Yeah, and it's not like a big deal. I just the notion that Bianca could go to Charlotte, you know who to call, or Charlotte could go, well, I know who to call, and everyone's like, oh yeah, of course. To me, it just would have been like better if someone said, you know, Charlotte, you've got someone's number who might be able to help us, and she acted like, oh, who's that? And Bianca just like whispered it to her or something. I don't know. I don't know how you stage that because they don't acknowledge the cameras are filming them. It's just to make it seem like it wasn't like, well, of course, if there's an unnamed person, Charlotte's going to call. Of course, it's Becky. It's just a small thing. I just think they could have tweaked it a little bit in that regard, but still kept it a mystery.
So I just thought of this, and it just now dawned on me. Did they say Kairi Sane's name all night? I'm sure they did, like in the recaps specifically. But did she get any new shine outside of, again, they showed the recaps of what she did in Saudi and whatever, but tonight specifically, did she get anything?
I don't think so.
Did she say anything? Did anybody high-five her, bring her into the conversation? It was
she kind of just was there, and, you know, they're obviously going to lean on Dakota to be the instigator. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if we should make anything of it, because, I mean, Dakota did a good job, and she needed to be the one doing most of the talking. And I like the idea that they're playing up, like, that there's this bond where Bailey went from the leader, not an abusive leader, but certainly
an obnoxious one.
Yeah, we said it together, an obnoxious leader, to now being insecure with her position. My big issue is how do they take us on a journey where we're going to have supposed to have as viewers any sympathy for Bailey if she ultimately gets rejected? Like, I mean, nobody wants to feel left out, and, you know, people can relate to, you have a group of friends, someone new shows up, and now you don't know where your place is. But Bailey's not really relatable in how she's handling this. She's telling the fans they're, you know, awful people and just throwing insult after insult at them. I'm just curious what journey they expect that they can take us on where people are going to be like, yeah, Bailey, we're going to cheer you now, if that ultimately is the goal. Is it a given that that's the goal?
I don't think that's necessarily the goal. I don't think there's going to be a big turn and they jump her and kick her out, because they're just not – she's not doing any – she's, if anything, she's doubling down on her heelishness to kind of try to endear herself to the new dynamic of the group. So I don't see, in 3 weeks or, you know, a month from now, 6 weeks from now, that they actually do turn on her. I don't think they'd be teasing it this overtly or being this on the nose with it if they actually intended to go through with it. Triple H loves his inter-faction turmoil. Like, is there a team or a faction that's not having issues? I mean, even Butch or whatever.
Yeah, Butch.
Ridge is like,
Ridge, yeah.
You know, shoving Butch away. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. More, and it is interesting. Like, people aren't always like super happy with their partner, with their faction members. Like, that's fine. But everybody at the same time is just having problems with their friends. It's just, if anything, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, if any complaint of their booking is that they'll run stuff into the ground, like fall in love with an idea, whether it's a finish or, you know, whatever, and then you'll just see it 17 times in 6 weeks. But yes, his interfaction turmoil is, and he does it well. I mean, people's reactions and responses to lines and things are on point. It's just happening a lot.
Yes, it is. I am enjoying Bailey now more than I have in a while, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
I like her feeling insecure, and I think they're like, instead of just talking to Michael Cole and bossing people around obnoxiously, like, she's good at playing this kind of super eager but not even paranoid, just rightfully concerned. Am I on the outs? Am I not? And her distress followed by the sense of, oh, everything's fine, so I'm going to go back to being obnoxious. Like, I think she's expressing what needs to be expressed effectively given the the seeming predicament that she's in with, you know, Dakota having to explain, you know, what's going on when Bayley's used to being the leader.
Yeah, she's good. She's hit. She's I said Bayley's heel character isn't as effective when she's not able to inject some humor into it. Like when she was doing Ding Dong Bayley, she was just phenomenal at that because she was able to, you know, be funny, but not in a way that's going to get the crowd to go, oh, that's right, Bayley's cool. She was funny in a really heelish mean way. So I actually don't think it's the humor necessarily. I think it's some other emotion other than generic heel, call the audience idiots, because that's kind of for a year or so. She just fell into this whole damage control thing. She's just fallen into this, you know, mean face, you know, you suck in the front row, you know, generic heel stuff. But when she has an emotion, whether it's humor, whether it's her just trying to kind of come across a little witty and sarcastic, or in this case, you know, feeling like a bit of an outsider and not knowing her place and the whole group dynamic, I think that's it. I don't even think it's the humor. I just think she needs more than just check off these three or four boxes of traditional wrestling heel stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I'll put. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce the show, and then we will cover a bunch of other topics. We had LA Knight and Jimmy Uso, Paul Heyman, singing John Cena's theme song again. You mentioned a tease of a breakup or some dissension, at least, with Ridge Holland and Butch. We can discuss where that's going and if Sheamus will be involved, if this is to kind of set the table for him to come back, and much more. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, November 17th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts throughout the week, including the VIP exclusive Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every week with Todd. It was delayed this week. Todd is in LA for Full Gear, and I recorded an hour and a half or so with Todd. I'm actually not sure how long we went, but an hour and a half before SmackDown. So that should be available for VIP members. Preview of tomorrow's Full Gear, along with a rundown of top happenings in pro wrestling over the last week and also some UFC talk. So go VIP to check that out, pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can subscribe online, and we have many ways to subscribe through Patreon, directly on your iPhone through the Apple podcast app. You can upgrade using your Apple account with just a finger tap on the side button, I think. I have a Galaxy, so I'm not 100% sure, but I know it's like one tap and boom, you're a VIP member getting all the VIP podcasts. You can also gain access to our 35 plus year library and our ad-free website and more by signing up through our main VIP website. All the details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. That also gives you information on signing up for home delivery of the paper copy Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the last one standing. So check out details on that. pwtorch.com/goVIP. We'd love to have you as a VIP member. You can support our approach to covering pro wrestling and get a lot in return. The other voice you hear on the show is Travis Bryant from the PW Torch East Coast cast. Travis, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me, Wade.
Great to have you. Always like talking wrestling with you. Tell people about the East Coast cast VIP version and how often they can look forward to it in coming months.
Yeah, Rich Fan and I, one of the voices you hear on many of the PW Torch podcasts, whether it's Everything or the various shows he does with Zach and Josh. He's a busy podcasting man. Rich and I, most Wednesdays of any given month.
Yeah, yep. Fair enough.
We'll have a conversation about wrestling and a lot of other things, books and video games and whatever's happening on a show that somebody's, you know, really into. So, yeah, it's just two pals chopping it up about wrestling and life. Give us a listen. Go VIP if you haven't.
Yeah, yeah. It's wrestling and other topics. But you get a sense of community and friendship when you go VIP. All right. Our phone number, if you want to join the conversation tonight is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on the switchboard and lets us know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also just call and listen if you'd like. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We will be covering Full Gear tomorrow live at pwtorch.com. So if you're an AEW fan and watching the pay-per-view, you can follow along with my report and Brandon LeClaire's report at pwtorch.com. Keep up on our thoughts on the show with analysis and star ratings and such. If you're not watching the show, you can also find out what happened. We'll be updating it after each match on the website tomorrow night. So hope you'll do that. And then VIP members can hear me hosting a post-event roundtable on the pay-per-view. Let's get to our SmackDown conversation, though, and continue that. And we'll actually let callers lead the way from here. And we'll begin with Ian in Tennessee and Brad from Florida. Yeah, Brad from Florida is on deck, too, is on deck. Ian, welcome. Good to hear from you.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. Well, what's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
What's up, bud?
Well, firstly, Wade, I'm quite proud of our Minnesota Vikings. We got Josh Dobbs. Quite proud of that. But back to wrestling, you know, I agree with you guys' earlier point about Becky Lynch. I was very disappointed in that because, you know, I was kind of thinking that this whole brand split was like a permanent thing. You know, Becky was on Raw. She's having this feud with Xia Li. So I was partially thinking, you know, maybe they bring in a call-up from NXT. Maybe they bring in, you know, Jade Cargill and, you know, basically have it be like, hey, she signed to SmackDown. She's on SmackDown. And she's joining Team Bianca. So, you know, am I the only one that thinks the whole Becky thing is kind of like a, oh, well, we'll just throw Becky in there just to kind of get it that star power. Maybe it was to compete with the Friday Night Wars with Rampage and Collision on the same time. What'd you guys think?
I'm watching Buddy Murphy against Wheeler Yuta up against SmackDown's main events, and I'm not thinking WWE's too worried about you know, having to counter program when they're on Fox. If they're on FS1, maybe they would have put a little more into it. I think they're just kind of doing their thing. They scored the points they needed to and spiked the football on that Tuesday battle, and they probably wouldn't book Survivor Series based on a one-off Collision head-to-head situation, because Collision was moved from Saturday to Friday because of not wanting to go head-to-head with their own pay-per-view, obviously. I just think they wanted to have Becky in an important match, and they're going to have 3 of the 4 horsewomen there. I don't know that there's much more to it, but you're not wrong in saying, wait, is there supposed to be, you know, a roster split, and maybe that should be acknowledged. There should be some sort of attempt to make an exception, like acknowledge an exception to that kind of thing. Travis, what do you think?
I think this would, if they were disciplined about their split, this would be a time where it would be okay, where it's a wrestler calling another wrestler, and it feels like, and it's on a pay-per-view. It's a thing. Sure, she showed up to have their back tonight, like if everything goes the same, but she's going to be wrestling at a pay-per-view, so the brand split sort of has some integrity and stays in place, but they don't. The brand split's been muddled, you know, since 3 weeks after the draft or whatever. So I don't think anyone well, I'm surprised you, caller, expects any kind of, you know, firm, hard brand split. It's all brand. The draft is just a marketing thing and kind of a template for where they're going for the next year. But it's just kind of more suggestion than rule.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the vast majority of the time, the wrestler assigned to a brand is only appearing on that brand, although Cody just hangs out everywhere in case a friend needs him. But that's just Cody being Cody and his character. I don't know. Ian, back to you. Any follow-up on that or anything else?
Well, yeah, you know, because, you know, you had the Adam Pearce make all this, you know, I think it was Nick Aldis was kicking Adam Pearce out of the arena because of Jay, and, you know, you had Nick Aldis on Raw talking to Kayden and Katana, you know, trying to get them to sign to SmackDown. So that's where I was just leaning.
Yeah, they've been playing
you know,
it
maybe
up.
Maybe they'll mention that on Raw. But the other point was, you know, the Santos heel promo was actually a lot better than I expected. I know he struggled getting over with the crowd and, you know, having the LWO. So do you see this leading to, you know, maybe having the I can never remember the other names, Cruz and Joaquin joining Santos later down the road and having like a war there? Where do you see this going with Santos?
Yeah, Travis, what do you think of the promo? I felt like there were maybe two or three times he didn't quite say things in the right order, and he tried to keep it cool and backtrack a little bit to make a point that he was supposed to make before the point he just made. Little things. I don't think, like, it was super noticeable or you know, damaged the promo too much, but it broke up the cadence a little. It was the longest just solo stand in the middle of the ring type promo that I can recall him giving, and it was a big one. You know, he had to really explain, you know, the key line being they say, you know, don't meet your heroes. And then he had to kind of parlay that into building up a match with Carlito because Ray will be sidelined for a couple of months. What did you think of the promo and everything that Ian brought up?
This was the best thing, talking-wise, certainly, I've seen him do in the 3 years or so he's been around in NXT and on the main roster. I think the perceived mistakes or, you know, maybe a little bit of just added to it, added to a guy who's clearly, like, frustrated and full of himself and at the same time. And I thought it was very well done, even Zelina coming out. I could have dealt without her putting her hands on the guy. But I actually thought, wow, they're going to really try to get this guy, get Santos some heat, and he's gonna like mush her in the face, like get out of my ring, and like shove her down maybe. But we can have women slap men all the day, especially small ones that don't really, you know, it's not much of a physical threat, but they're going to be real careful the other way, as they should probably. But yeah, this was I was a fan of tonight, and it made me, I did not care for Santos Escobar and the two guys, Raul and what's his face, and
Joaquin.
when they were first up, you know, a year or so ago, just continuing what they were doing in NXT as El Fantasma or whatever. I did not care for them. Did not really care for the babyface turn, although it made sense and I understood it. And I was like, oh, okay, it's just something. But if this was like, hey, give me 4 or 5 months of the LWO and we'll make you a bigger heel, then I think it was worth it. I don't know where the LWO goes from here because Joaquin and Raul are just hapless fodder. They are fodder to the end. I was like, ooh, is this one? I was like, yeah, well, it would have been a tough time for them to all of a sudden start when you're trying to get Santos over as a big-time heel. But I was like, are they going to, like, finally, like, get some balls and get some heat? No, they just got beat up, even though it was two of them. So fodder to the end. They clearly have nothing for them in the pipeline. They don't plan on counting on them in any kind of way. So I LWO and all that, that's probably over. That's probably why Zelina was crying. Like, oh, that merch check was nice the last 6 months. But, you know, that's, with Santos in the promo, I was thumbs up. I thought it was too fast. Last week, I'm sure you guys talked about it on last week's episode. But considering how fast it was, I like the emotion him and Ray brought to it. And if you're going to do something like that kind of out of the blue and really accelerate it, I thought they did a fine job. And then immediately the next week, have the guy explain, don't test the fans' patience and try to stretch this out for 2 or 3 weeks. They got right to it, and, you know, now I'm excited to see Santos versus Carlito.
I think it's a good point about Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde. Like, it just they're the jobbers, and I don't think it's good when someone turns heel and then they speak the truth that you guys were just sort of dead weight and hangers on and all that. And yeah, they didn't really come out of this any stronger. I'm curious where we are in, you know, 4 months when it comes to Escobar, Carlito, Rey, Joaquin, and Mendoza, and, you know, if they have something in mind for all of them, and does Carlito stay good and he teams with Rey when Rey comes back against Escobar and then who or what? I just don't, it's not obvious to me where all the kind of pieces fall into place as this goes on. They don't all have to wrestle each other. Maybe, you know, Mendoza and Wild end up repackaged in NXT. I don't know.
Well, or by the time Rey comes back in 3 or 4 months, Santos has systematically turned all those guys heel, and the LWO isn't gone. And maybe even Zelina, maybe even give her some edge. But I could see starting with, because there's no way in 4 months Carlito is going to be still babyface. He's barely a babyface, and he just returned and still has that kind of new car smell to him. Again, but his personality even last week when he came out there to accuse, he did it in the most heelish way.
I know.
Like, if you're concerned, you don't just the cadence, the facial expressions, pointing his finger at Santos. Yeah, I don't see Carlito maintaining the Scientifico way of wrestling too much longer. But, yeah, I can see Santos slowly but surely turning all those guys and maybe even Zelina too. Then Rey comes back and he's got nothing. He's got no family, no familia, no squad. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe post-Judgment Day, Dominic King's dealt with Escobar and some new faction too. But that's probably a waste on the road. Ian, back to you. Any follow-up, any of that, or anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, you know, I thought I read that the original plan before Rey got hurt was, you know, have like a Rey, Carlito, and mystery partner go up against the heel Santos and Joaquin and Cruz. But, yeah, my final point is, you know, the whole LA Knight solo, I kind of – Solo like absolutely beat Cena, and you know, now they're teasing Cena probably coming back at WrestleMania to get his revenge on Solo. But do you think them having Cody come out on SmackDown is to, you know, tell fans like, hey, you know, we're not giving up on the whole Cody Bloodline story? Or, you know, could it be that? Could it be, you know, just Cody was there for the Super Show the following night? Or what do you think they go with L.A., Cody, and the Bloodline?
Travis, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Cody was there and did the made the save to kind of, Cody isn't done with the Bloodline. Bloodline isn't done with Cody. Just kind of reminding fans that they don't like each other and why. As far as the immediate, I don't know. I don't have any real thoughts, specific thoughts on what I think they'll continue to do what they've been doing the last few months, just plug and play when they need, you know, when it makes sense for someone to show up and make a save or tag team partner for a six man or something. I think that's what we get for the next 2 months until the Rumble, until everyone starts, you know, really going, doing for self. And, I really hope, I'm hoping that I bet the Rumble, assuming Cody wins again, and I'm thinking he's in the first one or two this year to make up for, you know, to make up for, oh, he's off for all that time, and then he comes back and he's number 30, you know, that thing that no one cares about until it's someone they don't like. like Undertaker did it, Cena did it, Edge, or, you know, everybody, it's fine. But I think they're just keeping things revved up a bit and reminding folks who hates who and who's got beef with who and why. So, yeah.
Yeah. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, LA probably – LA maybe goes against Solo at Rumble, and, you know, they tease Cena coming back. And, you know, I don't – so one of my friends was saying he doesn't think Cody wins the Rumble. He thinks Cody wins the Elimination Chamber, and whoever wins the Rumble will probably challenge for the world title, whoever that is, Seth, Drew. We don't know because Seth just keeps magically winning at this point. But, you know, I kind of agree with maybe Cody goes to Elimination Chamber, wins that, and then says, you know, I'm not done with Roman. You know, I'm challenging Roman. Maybe that's where that goes, but, you know, I'm not 100% sure yet.
Nah, I think if you're going to knock off a guy who's going to be at whatever, 1,500 days at that point, probably plus, I don't know what it'll be by the time April rolls around, the person that beats him absolutely has to win the Royal Rumble. I think you do the traditional kind. So you're telling me the person that wins the Royal Rumble, that's it's not Cody Rhodes, they're going to say, Seth Rollins, I want you?
Right. I could see if Drew McIntyre won the Rumble.
He's got beat. He'd want another shot at Roman. You kidding?
That's true, yeah. I mean, why would he pick Seth over Roman? I'm trying to think of, like, people who they've set up with Seth and Drew shaking Seth's hand this week on Raw and then taking out Jay. It's just, I'm trying to think of a scenario where it would be a big enough name with a history of someone where they would choose it. But yeah, Drew would want to go after Roman because his whole point is the same one LA Knight is making, which is on an even playing field, I win.
Mm-hmm.
I am the most historic title reign in 40 years in this company.
Yeah. I think the Elimination Chamber is where Seth gets his challenger. And sorry, Seth, you're the second champion. Like, that's how it is. You cannot like it, but that's, you know, you're not Roman Reigns, and you're not on a historic run.
Yeah.
But
speaking
of think WWE would play it safe and build the Cody Rhodes route and have him win back-to-back? Or do you think they go, like, a shocker route, maybe Gunther wins or, you know, throws a curveball?
Yeah. Now Cody wins and he comes out one or two and he runs the gauntlet and wins, and they are not going to take any chances. Not that there's, you know, it's not last year. This isn't like, ooh, or are we going to get booze? I think we're well past are the fans going to turn on Cody. But you still don't want to tempt fate. So have the guy, you know, you're telling that story. This is going to be the year it pays off. So you want to build it up as much as possible, and you make it, and you challenge him. I don't know how you do it with Pierce, or he's kind of a babyface GM. You don't. This isn't Paul Heyman, GM of SmackDown, and Chris Benoit in 2003, at the end of 2003, that kind of thing. But Cody runs the gauntlet and wins the Rumble, and immediately. I'm not even sure I'd wait till Raw. I have Cody grab the mic right after WrestleMania or right after the Rumble win, and his fireworks are going off. Roman, you know, coming after you. But yeah,
all right, cool. Ian, anything else you want to bring up?
No, man. I'll let you guys get to the callers. It's always great talking to you guys.
Great, Ian, thanks. Appreciate it. Ian brought up, if Ray didn't have the knee issue, this could have been stretched out and things might have been different. Dragon Lee, someone who I could imagine teaming with Ray against Carlito and Escobar tell a story where, you know, Carlito at first accuses Escobar. I mean, could they be in cahoots? Well, no, I'm trying to think of how things played out if there's been physicality with Carlito that would preclude that. So, but if, like you said, Escobar maybe influences everyone to come to his side, turns everyone against Ray, or at least Carlito. Yeah. Then you could do Dragon Lee and Ray.
There was no – he sat there and watched Carlito get beat up, so that's kind of – you could point to that and say, well, that's not something you'd – yeah. But
it's tough to go, we're in it all along, but I watched you get beat up. Yeah.
But then he attacked Ray while he was holding Carlito, and then Carlito rolled out of the ring, and then everything was between Ray and Santos. So I think there's room. They could still – they could do the we were in cahoots all along. Ha ha, we pulled one over on you. But,
yeah,
I don't think so.
All right, we'll go to Brad from Florida next, and then Kyle from Baltimore. I haven't heard from him in a while. He is up after that. Brad, welcome. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, guys. So, you know, what I was thinking about as I was watching just, like, the beginning of the show was, like, I can't believe how many recent NXT call-ups or relatively recent NXT call-ups are, like, driving the show. Like, if you think about it, like, you know, the first match was – you know, pretty deadly, and even Butch, and then you get into Dragon Lee and Axiom, and then you get into Grayson Waller and Cameron Grimes, and, you know, you could even argue, like, you know, Damage Control, and LA Knight's basically a recent NXT call-up, or relatively recent, so it's just crazy how, yeah, within a year, so, like, it's just crazy how well they've integrated the minor leagues with the major leagues in terms of just making it seamless and keeping people interested. And you got to give them, I think, a lot of credit for that. But, oh, and Santos, also, you know, another NXT call-up who had a big spot tonight. You know, I thought Santos coming out to his old music, and I thought he was so cool tonight, guys. Like, this was the Santos that I've wanted to see for a long time. He was, you know, I just know from NXT, from watching it a lot, that he's such a good storyteller, and he is really able, especially when he's a heel, to, like, get people emotionally invested in his stuff, and I just thought he came across amazing. I mean, honestly, I think he gave a better promo than Heyman did tonight. I thought he was great, and you know, I just thought that whole spot was really well done with Santos and everything. And I was curious of what you guys thought of that segment. I know you did give some color before. You really did talk about it, but I just thought he was so cool tonight. You know, I thought it worked.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, the only thing is a couple times it just seemed like, oh, I got to go back and say this because I didn't say it yet, and I don't think it took away from the promo in any major way. It was just me kind of observing that he's got a lot to think about, a lot to talk about, and it's not something he's done a lot of. But there's, I mean, I'm all for them getting him back in the right role. But that is a bold statement saying it was better than Paul Heyman's promo. Travis, what'd you think of Paul Heyman, who got him singing John Cena's theme song I don't know, hitting a lot of talking points in that promo also? What'd you think of what Heyman did tonight?
Heyman was fine, but Heyman fine is, you know, most people's really good, you know, really good promo. No, he was fine. He was Heyman. Thought he was a little overly animated at times, but again, it was just, I thought Jimmy kind of being into what Paul was saying at times was interesting. Just watching Jimmy kind of just nod and smile and kind of really be paying attention, especially with Solo having his back to everything and just kind of staring off in one direction. It just highlights Jimmy paying so much close attention to what Heyman was saying. Then Heyman just gesticulating and the do-do-do-do, and he was just really animated tonight and just good Paul Heyman.
I was watching that and just thinking, it's so fun to have Paul Heyman getting to show his range and kind of flex what he can do, because there's basically a generation of people who have seen him stand around and just introduce Brock and act like a subservient lackey to Roman Reigns, who calls him the wise man, but Heyman is just always, you know, is just nervous around him. And when Heyman's around people who aren't Reigns or Lesnar in stature, and he can stand there and put over Solo Sikoa and put over his feud, but have it be more about him, he's getting to, you know, play other instruments he knows how to play verbally on the microphone. And so it's fun to see that, because I felt like Heyman was, like, really good at what he did for a long time, but I know how much more he's capable of, and I think he's having fun when he's out there. I enjoyed LA Knight calling him Boss Hogg in response. I thought LA Knight did a good job tonight also. Showed a little bit more range than kind of the normal places he goes catchphrase-wise. Travis, what do you think of LA Knight?
Yeah, LA Knight was good LA Knight. He hit all of his points and did it well and was good. There was one thing at the end. He set himself up for a line as if he was going to give an answer. Like, he asked a question or the way he phrased it should have been more, but then he just went into with everybody telling you whose game it is, LA Knight. And I was just like, oh, weird. He like set this thing up for himself and then couldn't pay it off, and or at least didn't in the way I thought was natural. And then he just went into his thing. But he was good. He was good.
Yeah. Brett, back to you. Any follow-up or anything else you want to say?
Oh, yeah, Travis, I totally know what you mean, man. I heard that too, and I forget exactly. It just didn't make sense. Like, he was going into some sort of story, and you thought it was going to have some kind of payoff, and he's like, and you know whose game it is. It's all, you know, whatever. I know what you mean, and I don't remember the exact specifics of it either, but I did catch that too. The only reason, guys, why I say Paul Heyman's thing wasn't that great tonight is because I felt like it seemed like a long time of him just going, and that was solo, and blah, 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 and that was because of solo. And then it just never ended, that loop of, and that was solo. And I get it, he's trying to get a point across, and I understand. But I've just seen him be so much better, in my opinion. And I thought it was a little like just the same thing over and over and over again. Jimmy really looks like a big loser tonight, honestly. Like, he looks like looks like a jobber, honestly. Like a big loser. But this is my main question to you guys. Okay, I thought for sure when I called you on Monday night, Wade, that Randy was going to be the fifth guy for Cody's team. And after seeing Cody come out tonight, now I think it's going to be – I think Randy's not going to be the guy. I think it's just going to be LA Knight showing up on Raw and saying – you help me, Cody. Now the megastar's here to help you, blah, blah, blah. And now I don't know if that was done for that purpose or if that was done just to get Cody back in the bloodline sphere or a combination of both. But I just want your guys' thoughts on, like, who that fifth man is for the men, because the only thing I'm thinking, and not that Randy has something to do with the Judgment Day because he really doesn't, but LA Knights had nothing to do with the Judgment Day, from what I remember, unless I'm totally forgetting about something. I don't even know if there's been an interaction between him and the Judgment Day. So I don't know why LA Knight makes sense in that story as much as Becky does in the Damage Control story, because that is a little bit more intertwined. So I want your guys' thoughts on that. Like, is LA Knight the fifth man on this Survivor Series team? I would guess so, right? Because what is he doing at Survivor Series if not?
And is it a given that it's going to be 5-on-5? I mean, we got 4-on-4 with the women, and it's set 4-on-4 for the men. I mean, we speculated that they might do that because that's been typical in the past. But, Brett, you seem almost like thinking it's a given. And I'm trying to remember if I forgot something that steered us.
Isn't Drew the fifth?
Well, Judgment Day only has three men.
I don't know that JD McDonough is
and Drew.
Oh, I forgot about McDonough. Yeah. Sorry, that's right.
When was Drew established for sure as a fifth guy?
I guess the handshake. Is that what we're
meaning? It was the handshake, and he wasn't established for sure as the fifth guy. But it was a handshake, and then on social media, you know, him and Rhea are going back and forth. She's writing Drew Bloody McIntyre. He's writing Rhea Bloody Ripley. They're showing the handshake. I mean, yeah.
I get all that. I just wonder if it's going to be – if there's a longer story arc here that doesn't involve them actually adding him as an official fifth person at War Games. They'd have to come up with a good reason for – there to be a fifth member, because it is tidy right now. They've got four baby faces that make sense, and the complete now the you know four men in Judgment Day. Now that JD's been officially, you know, a member, I'm not ruling out they don't just stick with that. But yeah,
Well, wait, I could give you one other thing. After Raw went off the air, and I saw this clip all over social media, after Raw went off the air, Cody got on the microphone, and I know it's just, at that point, it's just like a house show. It doesn't matter. It wasn't on the air. But Cody got on the microphone and said, oh, yeah, you think you got Drew? You got friends? He said, well, we got friends, too, and I can make a phone call and blah, blah, blah. And that's, and then the crowd went nuts, and they started chanting CM Punk, obviously. But, you know, I really do think by that comment that Drew is a fifth, and, you know, Survivor Series has always been historically men 5-on-5. I get it. It's 4-on-4 for the women right now. Who knows? Maybe next Friday we see Jake Cargill show up for the Becky Lynch Charlotte team, and we see Dakota Kai take off her knee brace and say I could wrestle. Who knows? 5-on-5.
Yeah, and I'm not, like, trying to – I don't know either way whether it's going to be 5-on-5 or 4-on-4. And I understand there's talk of that. We talked about it 2 Mondays ago. I mean, like, it's certainly fun to talk about, and there's certainly things pointing in that direction. I just haven't seen it as, like, definitive at this point. They could do an injury angle where Drew has to fill in for one of Judgment Day if they were to, you know, have a storyline injury. I think there's other things that they could do. But if they do, if Drew does join them, I mean, they're down to just next week to tell that story, including Thanksgiving weekend, the Thanksgiving weekend SmackDown. So yeah, I just don't know if there's enough time to tell. I mean, there is enough. Technically, there's enough time to tell that story, whether it's LA Knight showing up or Randy Orton or someone else. But LA Knight's focus does seem more Judgment Day oriented, excuse me, more Bloodline oriented. So to me, it just seems like, you know, LA Knight and Solo or something like that, one-on-one jumps out more to me. Travis, I mean, it seemed like LA Knight and Solo is more likely than LA Knight. I get Brad's reasoning about, hey, LA Knight and Cody, you know, cross paths tonight. So, you know, stood side by side. So that must hint at something. What do you think?
I don't have much of an opinion or where they're going. Yeah. I think what they've shown us are, you know, I don't think there's going to be any kind of major twists or anything.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Brad, back to you.
No, that's it. But I do want your guys' thoughts on, before I hang up or whatever, on Jimmy Uso just looking pathetic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's the polar opposite of what Jay looks like. I mean, Jay won a championship already. He looks like this huge winner. I mean, Jimmy literally, tonight's match especially, he was pathetic. I mean, he just pathetic, a jobber, basically. And I want your thoughts on that. And, you know, have a great night, guys, and I'll be listening to the rest, you know?
Cool. Thanks, Brad. How did Jimmy – you know, LA Knight beating Jimmy clean with his finisher – it's not like they're saving Jimmy, you know, for big pay-per-view matches, or it seems like, you know, they're diminishing him in that it's not like he's going to be a top threat if he were to, you know, break up with Roman because Roman treated him bad, because it just seems like they're treating him in a way where that just isn't something that's on their mind. What did you observe, and what are your thoughts on losing in just under 10 minutes to LA Knight and the way that he acted around Heyman and Solo?
Yeah, I think you guys are overstating it a bit as far as his pathetic jobber status.
I didn't call it pathetic. I'm just stating facts. He lost in our 10 minutes. So, but go ahead.
In the main event of a
– hey, it's a clean finish. Maybe we shouldn't read too much into it, because that's the argument you always make. People don't do distraction finishes and always have, you know, cheating. It's just sometimes someone's a better man that night, and it shouldn't equate to a burial. But we aren't far enough along, Travis, in that where usually when there's a clean finish, it is a sign – well, they didn't bother to protect him. But in this case, it could just be trying to be a braver booker and not always do screwy finishes where someone has to trip on a shoelace or slip on a banana peel.
Yeah, I just thought he's Jimmy Uso. He hasn't been – I mean, if he expected more, then that's – I don't know, it's on you. I mean, the guy's in the main event. He's the show's not built around him or anything, but you know, it's a big deal for LA Knight, and beat him in 9 minutes, not two.
Right. Yep. All right. Let's go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, welcome. It's been a while. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
For me, I've just had this kind of thing about both War Games matches. Now, I like the fact that, you know, it all makes no sense for Becky to really be in this match because she has no business control anymore because she kind of finished that feud back in WrestleMania. But for I guess, a big star name, it makes sense that he's a big star. I can't, you know, Shotzi feels like the weak link in this match in a lot of ways. So I just think I wish they kind of switched over Shotzi with someone else, but you know what, it is what it is. Or the potential, the storyline you were playing off with Shotzi as well with damage control, so that did make sense. But for the three of them in Becky, Bianca, and Charlotte, when Shotzi was, and then with damage control, I think I like that. Now, I am kind of expecting, even though Becky's in the match, I still expect damage control to win because, I don't know, I'm looking at damage control, looking at specifically not just Bayley, but Io and Kairi Sane and Asuka. I mean, my God, I'm glad Kairi's back on WTV. I think it's great. But so this early prediction, I do think Damage Control may win, but who knows? But I do like this match in general. I think it's going to be fun. I think it'll be a little bit better than the last year's. In my opinion, I think it will be even the men's. I'll go to the men's too for a second. For those really a Raw stand at this point, I like it to stay the way it is. On the men's side, because it just makes sense. If they add anyone else, it wouldn't make any sense. They already have 4-4 with the women and with the men. I don't think it's necessary to add a fifth when it just seems clear that Judgment Day has issues with the people from they were facing who were on Raw. I've heard a lot of rumors saying that Bloodline may get involved and all this. No, who knows? I'm not expecting Bloodline to get involved. I'm not expecting LA Knight to magically be on in War Games. I'm just not expecting that. I'm expecting it to stay the way it is. But I like the way – I like how both War Games matches look right now. And I know it doesn't make sense for having Becky in the match, but again, it kind of does make sense. I don't know, I'm going all over the place with this. But with the women themselves moving forward after this, because what are you going to do after this? Because it feels like to me they're kind of like in a holding pattern because they were just focused on this War Games and then – my question is, what are you going to plan on doing with Kairi Sane and Io Sky and Bayley after it? That's this way the tension there is going to lead to potentially.
Well, yeah, and that's – I am really curious what they have in mind for Bayley after this. And Travis, you're like, well, maybe she stays heel. I think that's what you kind of indicated earlier. She stays heel. She just isn't with damage control. Maybe they do a thing where she just goes from the top to the bottom of the food chain. Or the hierarchy, I should say, within that group, and they play that out for a while and long enough that Bayley starts to insult the fans less, and they have a long story arc in mind. But she could split off and be a heel and just isn't associated with damage control. Although that's a weird pro wrestling story, is to be rejected by your heel group and stay heel and also a main eventer. That I think would be, using Brad's language, that would be the thing that would make someone look pathetic. So I'm not sure, Travis, any additional thoughts on the trajectory for Bayley and where this is all kind of pointing?
Yeah, I just think they're going to get through Survivor Series and through the War Games match, which I agree, Damage Control will and probably should win. War Games is the one where you only need, once everybody's in, you just need the one pinfall, right? It's not any kind of elimination.
Yeah, it used to be only submission, and now it's pinfall or submission. The original
it used to be only?
Yeah, the original War Game, someone had to give up. It was surrender. You had to surrender.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. We're talking like the 86 one, right?
Yeah. The original WCW version.
Which was a big deal, because no one tapped out or gave up, really, back.
Yeah, well, J.J. Dillon just would be in the match and he'd have up. I got to refresh my memory on those early positions, but I'm almost positive it was only surrender. But I think they used, like, they said you have to blank or blank, and they were both synonyms for surrender. We'd have to go back and look it up.
Yeah. I remember guys would be in a Boston Crab for 3 minutes, and then they'd stand him up and do a backbreaker and then pin him. Like, why didn't he just tap out? But because it was 1988, and they just didn't do that. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just they're going to get through the Survivor Series, and they're going to tell this story on TV for the rest of the year as far as damage control and the dynamic between them. I do hope they have something good in mind because there's some interesting stories they can tell. And I'm interested to see how they tell these stories with these three Japanese women that can't necessarily, and it can, but not in the way WWE is used to when WWE fans certainly are used to. I mean, they can tell their own story on the mic and stuff, but yeah, that's the part that interests me the most.
Well, if Dakota Kai stays with them, she can be kind of,
yeah.
I haven't gotten a sense yet of what the kind of, kind of like Judgment Day, what the hierarchy is going to be within that group. But Dakota was the one doing the talking and certainly seemed like she felt she was more in with them than Bayley was and was almost kind of taunting Bayley with plausible deniability that's
what it almost was like. Dakota secretly learned Japanese and knew everything that was being said, I don't have much more to add to that.
There was one moment, hold on for one second here. Road Dogg said there's only one way to win a match. And then Kevin Patrick, who I don't think knew what he was doing, says, that's right, pinfall or submission. And Road Dogg's like, oh, yeah, two ways. And I just so wanted Michael Cole to go or count out or disqualification or rep stop. Like, just jump in there.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Road Dogg. Why was he out there? Like, isn't this the perfect opportunity to make Kevin Patrick sink or swim with a two-man booth? You know, like, let the guy grow as an announcer. Why? Like, Kevin Owens, fine. You want to do stuff. You want to keep him in fans' minds when he's not embroiled in any kind of feud or doing anything on TV necessarily very overly interesting. But this week, Road Dogg?
And he wasn't good.
And he
I'm
wasn't
sorry.
Good. He was average at best. He was average at times, not so great for the rest.
Yeah, it's like his material really, or his humor hasn't aged well. Like, there was, do you like the disco ball? And he's like, well, it reminds me of some partying back in the 90s that I don't remember. So he's like making references two or three times to, how drugged out he was, that he has no memories of anything. And then he tried twice to get the announcers to laugh at his joke that Corey Graves isn't there because he and Wade Barrett had a baby. And I'm like, what's the punchline? They're both color commentators, but is it because they're both men? Is that what's hilarious? Maybe in the Seinfeld era, you could tell the joke and explain. And Cole and Patrick,
even know if in the Seinfeld, it's just not funny.
Yeah, there's no joke to it. It's just like, can you imagine two guys having a baby? That's not biologically possible. That'd be weird. Like, the premise of the whole thing, it's like, it's just empty. And he told the joke twice. And the second time, Patrick and Cole kind of chuckled. So I don't know if he, complained they didn't laugh the first time, but he tried twice with the same bad, lame joke that I don't even get what it's supposed to be funny about it unless you're just, old and out of touch. And frankly, that's how he came across.
Also, I'm so glad you brought up the damn disco ball. Going back to NXT, I never understood. Disco is uniquely American, right? There aren't these vaguely European guys. Like, they have EDM right there, but they're going to have them coming out to a
that is weird
disco song
and
a disco ball. Like, the whole thing. It was weird when they had when they mixed like psychedelic dude love and disco. Like, those are very different, crowds, and they have very different outlooks on life and partying, psychedelic folks and disco. But you could say, well, that was 1998. And, Vince Russo isn't exactly, whatever. You could blame it on the times, but now you got these they're Europeans.
Yeah.
These European guys coming out to a disco stuff that's 50 years old. It doesn't make any sense. They're not disco dudes, disco queens. Like, Europe has their own rich, you know, musical scene that's very relatable that people would go, oh, European long hair guys, and they're listening to their stuff. Like, okay, that makes sense. But the disco ball. So
it kind of feels like Vince McMahon is like, disco ball, yeah. And then it just happens, and no one says anything.
But it goes back to NXT, so you can't even blame
them. I'm not blaming them. I'm actually sort of your point is good, and I'm saying to back it up, this sort of feels like a Vince McMahon thing, but it's not, and it's not how Pretty Deadly or Triple H want to feel about their presentation of them. I mean, if they told the story that they're obsessed with American disco and that's part of what's inspired them, I mean, then tell that story. But if not, it does. I'm trying to think of a designer fashion faux pas that would relate, and I can't. But you know, where someone thinks something goes with something and it doesn't. But sure. Anyway, point made.
It definitely clashes.
Yeah. All right. It's a little bit like an iPhone in a movie based in the 1970s. It's like, oops. Kyle.
Or Starbucks cup based in, you know, dragon middle whatever.
Yeah.
Medieval dragon kind of.
Exactly.
Age.
Yeah. Yeah. The stuff that my Uncle Dan lives to discover and point out if he watches a movie. Kyle, thanks for indulging us as we went on a sidebar there. What else is on your mind, or do you want to respond to any of that?
Yeah, I guess just in general, this was nothing about that, but I think I'll move on now. At the end of the day, for that, I am looking forward to both World Games matches. I think they'll both be really entertaining this year for me. But I'll just pivot to Dragon Lee's match and the momentum he is having since coming to SmackDown. And what do you think what's the ceiling with Dragon Lee moving forward in the main roster at this point? He's been doing a great thing momentum wise in terms of what he's been doing, and I've been entertaining what he's been he's been really fun to watch ever since he debuted to SmackDown. So what do you think is next for him moving forward in the mid card scene probably? But that's just pretty much it, just Rafael.
Ben, he's talented. Obviously Paul Levesque likes him a lot, wants him to overlap with Ray and become the new Ray, and I think that's smart. To you know, have an association and kind of carry on, and he's really talented and I think does have kind of an X factor and a charisma that, you know, justifies his push in a way that, you know, other masked wrestlers who have tried to be in this, be anointed this, haven't had. Travis?
Yeah, he's good and talented and can wrestle and do all the moves. I can't get past the Dragon Lee part and the aesthetic of his Titantron video and, you know, like you're a Mexican luchador named Dragon Lee. I get it. Bruce Lee somehow is your idol.
That.
You're like 20, you know, but somehow I guess you can like people that.
Yeah, I mean, Toni Storm does. She's turned into somebody from 100 years ago or 80 years ago. Yeah. I mean, but and they've told, I think.
No, they did. In his debut.
They
you know, whatever.
But
Try to explain it all you want. It still feels disjointed and like, ugh, this is. As soon as I see those dragons on his Titantron, I'm just like,
yeah, is it a.
I don't believe in cultural appropriation. I think that's one of the dumbest modern things. Like, cultural appropriation is what makes the goddamn world, you know, turn and global trade, and the Silk Road was cultural appropriation, you morons. But anyway, this is kind of feels like cultural appropriation.
Yeah. Or a luchador who just wants to get gigs in Japan by...
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Let's go to Jordan in Kentucky. And if you're live streaming and want to join us, the phone line is open, 347-215-8558. Push 1. You're still invited to join the conversation tonight. Or email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Jordan, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight about
this? Hey. Well, I attended the show tonight. Just thought I would call in. It was
awesome.
It was a lot of fun in the beginning and end. You know, I like Dragon Lee, like his performance. There was a pre-match Karrion Kross sighting you might have enjoyed. I didn't know where he went, but it was a good time. I can't wait for the War Games, especially the men's, but. the Becky Lynch showing up at the end as the fourth member. But is there only four women in the match? I thought there would be five. Is Dakota Kai, I guess she's not healthy, so there's just going to be four?
Seems that way. Yeah. Okay. I don't think they'd make a big deal out of three people needing a fourth person to join them and then go, oh, you need one more also. Well, yeah. At least the heel team would need one more also as well. But yeah, unless Dakota got cleared and doesn't seem like she has. Yeah. So yeah, I think they're both going to be 4-4, and that's fine. I mean, I don't think there's nothing about war games where I think it has to be 5-on-5. And they've had other numbers before. They happen to have five historically more often.
But. And they do the 5-minute intervals, I think. So you know, every match is going to be at least 20 minutes.
With each, the staggered entrance.
You're shaving 10 minutes off just by not having two more people in the match, which is probably a good thing.
Travis, would you change war games? Would it have been nice in this modern era to just say two people start and then every 3 minutes or 5 minutes, two more enter and drop this whole, you know, advantage, 2-on-1 advantage thing? I mean, almost always. I think there's one exception historically. I'm not like great on all that trivia, but where the baby faces had
the advantage. Yeah. And then it probably didn't work. It probably was this doesn't feel right. Like,
yeah, I'd be fine with it. Two people enter at a time and just, I don't know.
Well, if you're going to do two people enter at a time, then you might want to go the other way with the time. Every 6 minutes instead of five, you add a minute because you're not going to be staggering it that much anymore. So the final two will be in the ring after 15 minutes or whatever.
Kind of fine with that too, but that's more granular than I need to. Yeah. I need to refine at the moment, but I get your point.
But as far as the advantage, I think the advantage part, especially because they don't really make a big deal out of it in the weeks leading up to it. It usually was like they're talking about it, who's going to have the advantage, then they have a match to determine. Now it's like, oh, they flipped a coin backstage and the heels won, of course.
Yeah. All right. Jordan, let me go back to you here. And you're talking about the show. I've got questions for you I can ask. But anything else? Actually, I wanted to ask you follow up on this. Elaborate on the Karrion Kross sighting a little bit. What was the context again?
Oh, well, there was a Karrion Kross sighting. I mean, the pre-match was Karrion Kross and Cedric Alexander. And it's just that Karrion hadn't wrestled on TV in a while. And then when the he came out, the crowd was kind of into him a little bit, even though he's a heel. I don't know. I kind of like the guy. He's not the greatest wrestler in the world, but I know he's a mid-card guy. Cedric is talented. He's...
Who won? Who won? Between Kross and Cedric.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I was just asking who won.
Who won? I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Kross. Yeah. He won.
Okay.
He won.
Yeah.
Cedric had his moments. But, Karrion came out. He left. And then it started. Man, it seemed like it was all commercial, though. But, in the middle, though, it really, after Damage Control and the three came out and charged Damage Control, the matches kind of dragged on. The crowd was into it, though. They was a better crowd than last time we were in Evansville. I was really disappointed. This is as close a drive as we can make to make a show, because we just live an hour away. And the last time there was really the opening match, and I don't even remember what the finish was. The main event was more or less just an appearance by Bloodline without Roman Reigns, where they just came out and kind of talked, I think. But the show was really nice. We had a good time. The Dragon Lee is, I think he's going to eventually get a little bit of a push. I like his abilities. I'd never heard of Axiom. I'd never heard of him before. Did they bring him up from NXT? because I don't watch NXT.
Yeah.
Okay. The storyline with the at the beginning were, and that, it's kind of hard to hear what they're saying at times. And Bailey's supposed to be the leader, and you know how in with Edge's group they kind of kicked him out. Remember that with Finn Balor came in and they kicked Edge out. He was the weak link. I kind of thought that's where they were going for a minute with Bailey. Did that come across on TV like that, or
for sure.
Miss? Okay. I think they eventually might. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're that's the angle they're going to shoot for or not. But I think if they do, I don't see her becoming a I see her becoming a babyface again. I don't see her staying a heel. I don't think she'll go back to the balloons and everything, but I think that she'll become a babyface. What do you think?
Yeah, we talked extensively early in the show about that, so I won't repeat. I can just point you to listen back to the long conversation. But in short, yeah, I think it makes more sense for her to turn babyface. But it's a weird road to take to get there if she's kicked out by heels who, well, Bailey is insulting the fans. So, but yeah, we've covered that from multiple angles, just trying to figure it out.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I hope they know what they're doing.
Okay.
Let me ask you this: what kind of reaction did LA Knight get compared to other baby faces on this show, including, you know, Becky showing up and all that? I'm just kind of curious, with all the buzz of LA Knight in recent months, you got to see him in person tonight. He's not getting pushed aside post Crown Jewel. They're happy enough with him.
No.
That they're not like, okay, good, we gave the fans the main event, now we're going to mid-card him. He's getting prominent time and prominent positions. Did it seem like the crowd was into him?
When his music hit, boom, you know, the crowd is into him. Everybody is into him. He is so over that at AEW events, we go to a lot of those, travel a little bit and go to those, that the crowd is going, yeah, let me talk to you. I mean, he's everywhere, and he is a crowd favorite, and that the reaction that he gets wherever he is on TV right now, it's exactly what he got in Evansville. It was, him, Becky, and Charlotte definitely got the biggest pops, I'd say, you know. A lot of the, whenever Grayson Waller came out, you know, there was really no reaction at all, not a lot of booing. But, you know, L.A. Knight's huge, and he's going to be the one that challenges again for the Roman Reigns' title, and I don't see any other way around that. He is so big right now. What do you think?
Well, I want to ask your thoughts on the women when they came out, and if there was a discernible difference with Charlotte, Bianca, and Shotzi, and then how that compared to Becky showing up.
Okay. Bianca got a nice reaction. Shotzi, mild reaction. You know, I like Shotzi, she's kind of the weak link. I heard you mention that a while ago. If they did lose that match, I see her taking the pinfall. I'm not sure they will lose. It's hard to say. But Charlotte came out, and big pop for Charlotte, and Damage Control comes out. And then you hear in the distance, you hear a roar starting, and here comes Becky, you know. So, yeah, it was huge, and did not expect Becky, and I was real happy to see that. She really adds a lot.
Can you rank the reaction? Was there an obvious ranking of the reactions among those four?
A ranking would be, I think, Becky because of the surprise, and then Charlotte. Charlotte was not far behind, and then Bianca, and then Shotzi.
Okay.
So that is the order of the as far as the crowd noise, but they, you know, it was. I'm looking forward to the match. I really think that these two. I'm really looking forward to this pay-per-view. I really am. And I think the men's match is going to be a banger. Really do. But any questions?
Yeah. So Travis, do you have a question that you want to throw Jordan's way?
No, I think you've done an adequate job, Wade, getting more out of them than, you know. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask. Was there was the crowd very into Escobar? And his promo, or did it seem like, yeah, go ahead with that.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't like shutting down Dominic, but it was shutting him down. I don't know if that came across on TV, but sound around
us. Of course, first few lines.
Was like, yeah, they wanted to shut him down and let him know. I mean, you know, it's Rey Mysterio. Obviously, sounds like Rey had something wrong anyway, but they had to shut him down, and that's really what happened. But with Escobar turning on them, whenever Vega came out, everyone was yelling, slap him, slap him, because he knew it was coming. But, when Carlito, the other guys got beat up, and then when Carlito came out, everybody was he got a good reaction. You know, everybody was wanting that and expecting that. You know, that was obviously going to happen. But, Escobar, man, he really got a – he was the biggest heat of the night, definitely, I would say.
In the three-way tag match, did the Street Profits get booed? Are fans up on them being heels? Or are they still kind of popping for them just out of kind of a legacy standpoint, and are people treating Pretty Deadly as just like a joke, or how are they into them? Were you able to kind of pick up on that during the match?
Good question. Great question. And Pretty Deadly, I don't know why people are into them. I don't like their act. Some people around us were into them. The other two groups, I think my mind went blank, but the Montez Ford and Ford and Dawkins, I think the fans were into them, but I think part of the reason is Bobby Lashley, because I'm still, even though they're heels, I'm still a Lashley fan. And then I'm glad Bobby was at least there and came out. And the fans were into them. But the fans were more into the Brawling Brutes. And, you know, I think that whenever Butch accidentally kicked the big guy, what's his name?
Ridge.
I watch him all the time. Yeah, Butch kicked
Ridge.
His partner there.
Ridge Holland.
Yeah, Ridge. Yeah, Butch kicked Ridge. Everyone was like, ah, crap, they're going to lose. But, you know, the crowd was behind them and wanted them to win the match. And, you know, it ended up being Dawkins, and they would have been the second favorite. Pretty Deadly was, I don't think anybody really. But, you know, they're getting a push. You know, they're winning matches, but losing this one, I don't know what it really says, I mean, about their future. But the WWE is a lot more fun now to watch than it was a year and a half ago. They're really, really picking up steam again. I don't know what you guys feel about that, or how you guys feel, but fun, really fun to watch again. We're going to Raw in Nashville, and I'm looking forward to that because it's a longer show. There'll be more filler there in Nashville. There were people tonight that got the night off. I wish we're like KO. I wish KO were. Now, I don't know. Was there some kind of suspension with KO after the last
on TV
week?
There was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That explains why he had, this week off. But, looking forward to War Games. We'll be watching. Guys, thanks again. You put in a lot of work. Appreciate all the work you do. You put on a great show. Thank you.
Jordan, thanks. Always good hearing from you. It's cool you see so many shows, and I'm glad you share your thoughts and observations with us. Enjoy your weekend.
Oh, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. All right, Travis, I, at this point of show where I want to ask you if there's any other topic I haven't brought up that you've got something to say about?
I think we covered certainly all the important stuff from tonight.
Where do you think you're going? We covered it just briefly, but what do you think they're doing with Butch and Ridge Holland? Is this just to create a little storyline for Sheamus to come in and try to make peace, or are they going to split them up? And if so, what would be the point of that?
Isn't Sheamus on the show for a while, a nice stretch? Won't he be off?
But when he comes back, he can be like, "What are you guys doing? What happened?" They could tell.
Yeah, but if he's not coming back for 4 months, or if he's a post WrestleMania,
come back. But we've seen Bobby Lashley just stand around. Yeah, I guess he could show up sooner. But yeah, I don't.
But either way, I think it's just something to. Just to give that team something, it was a tough loss. Express the disappointment of the loss. That's fine. If it turns out to just be in the moment frustration and they're all good next week and there's no, if their next match, there's not another miscue and, there doesn't seem to be a pattern. I just think it'll be just one of those things that, the agony of defeat.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I'm fine for there being a dispute with the tag team and then they just get together again because it kind of changes the sense of it's always inevitable when something like that happens. It's a breakup. But what I'm trying to say is, like, Sheamus could come back and just sort of like Lashley with the Street Profits, just be an advisor, and try to keep them together and get frustrated. I mean, I think it's a shoulder injury and that wouldn't prevent him from traveling or walking around and being present. So I don't know. I mean, just try to speculate, where they're going with this. But it could be they want to team Butch up with somebody else and change his name. And they see Holland as, sending him to NXT to get more. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying it could be multiple things, but it's likely something and not nothing. But maybe it's just a one-off little thing they threw in there for no, no big reason that we need to, speculate more on. Are you surprised at how Cameron Grimes is being used, Travis?
No.
And why not?
I'd have to ignore how he's been booked and treated the last year to be surprised.
Well, are you surprised at how he's been booked and treated for the last year?
For the last year? No. No.
You're not, you don't think he's just a mid-card utility guy.
Yes. I don't think they see him as any kind of game changer or even just an interesting. Just the fans haven't gotten behind him or anything, so they're just like, well, we'll just do what we normally do with a guy who's 5'8" and 175 pounds, and doesn't have a ton of personality. Well, he does, but we haven't tapped into that.
Well, his personality consisted of saying to the moon and.
Yeah,
doing old Southern laugh, cackle laughs, and I don't know. I mean, he got to be pretty one note, in terms of his character. And then when he showed up in the main roster, it was just like, look at my. He looked like he was dressed for church.
Bible study clothes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just have no idea. He went.
Youth pastor. Maybe that's where they should lean into.
Oh,
Cameron Grimes, a youth pastor.
That has not been done, has it, in wrestling?
It's
a youth pastor,
probably for reasons.
Yeah, oh, for sure, yeah, well.
The Brother Love is as close as they've come to anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just so over the top, no one could be offended.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm fine. Wrap it up there. Travis got a big day tomorrow with, long pay-per-view, which should be packed with good matches. Oh!
What do you mean long?
Full Gear will probably be 4 hours, 45 minutes.
Oh, but not like because it's been marketed as long.
No, I'm just saying compared to WWE, which, you know, sure, they clock in at about 3.5 hours, you got to add hour and a half to AEW. And, I mean, obviously,
I'm going to camp tomorrow to watch that. So I don't follow their TV week to week, but I will drop in on an occasional pay-per-view.
Interesting, yeah.
So that's, I got nothing else to do, so I might as well watch AEW.
Yeah, well, I'm
and eat free food and drink cans booze.
That's right. I'm fine with you commenting. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the pay-per-view. Hopefully they have some video package to catch you up on the backstory of these matches, Travis.
Yeah, I'm sure, and I'm sure everybody there is a weekly.
Oh, I know.
At least week to week fan, so I won't be too lost.
No. Cool. So thank you, Travis. Fun talking SmackDown with you.
Yep. Appreciate it, and look forward to the next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Obviously, by the way, we won't be doing the Collision Post Show tomorrow like normal because it happened tonight, but we do have a report up on pwtorch.com if you want to catch up on the show, and same thing with Rampage. So pwtorch.com to check that out, and we'll talk to you all next time.